No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, and today we have the living legend himself, Too Short, in the building. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. I'm looking forward to this one.
Hell yeah. Why is that? You heard anything?
Nah, they just said you guys are the biggest in the game.
Yeah, I mean, coolest, maybe.
The coolest?
I mean, that's what they're saying.
Well, if you had to measure what's by numbers or by math or by whatever it is, the coolest is the biggest and the best.
Nah, fuck all that, because the best rapper ain't in the world ain't the rapper who sold the most.
I'm the coolest rapper that ever lived, and I think I'm the best.
Hey, okay, but MC Hammer might have sold more, but he ain't the coolest rapper in the world.
Exactly.
And never was at any moment, I'm guessing.
But Hammer's from Oakland, man, so we gonna keep it real. Shout out to my man Stan.
I might have fucked up the hood politics there real quick. I just remembered MC Hammer's
kind of
valid.
From the town.
You know, I had a hilarious experience the other day where so we do this thing in here where we'll sort of be streaming and people can pay us like $75 and we'll play their song on the stream, give them our opinions and stuff. This girl shows up and she just straight up is like, oh, play my song. She pulls $75 in ones out of her purse. She goes, play my song. I'm signed to Too Short.
Hey.
I'm like, that's amazing that Too Short is working with a girl who, I mean, I'm not going to say how she got the $75 in ones, but I could have assumed.
I probably work with a rapper.
Yeah. Do you feel like, what's your thoughts on like the role of women in hip hop? Because a lot of people in the industry will tell you that there's just a huge gaping hole, no pun intended, for women.
Very, very strong opinions. I feel like from day one, hip hop has had a lot of space for women, but the perception is that they have to come in a certain way. Mm. So we have our proud females, and then you have the ones who did the, you know, like the gold digger image, and then kind of like certain females are kind of a little sexual and stuff. But I think that in hip hop, I've always said, because I deal with a lot of female rappers trying to, you know, motivate certain songs and images or whatever, but over the years. But I think that it's just like the men. You have all these people that come from left field with characters and different angles and different, you know, different looks and stuff. And I feel like right now in hip hop, we're starting to see women just strip it down and go, I'm doing whatever I want to do. Mm-hmm. And we do have a lot more active female rappers now than we ever had ever.
Right.
And I think that the thing that to me was always missing was that they just weren't taking those lanes, those unconventional lanes of, I don't know, if I was a female rapper, I probably would have shot my first video with my titties floating in the bathtub or something. That would have been a Too Short angle on female rapping.
Because you understand the value of sex appeal because, you know, you've been using it your whole career.
And it wouldn't have been like a image thing. It would have just been like, hey, y'all, I'm here. You know, right. kind of Courtney Love kind of thing. But, you know, right now it's like you could come with different looks. You can be one of the boys. You could be whatever. So, you know, like speaking of like, you know, what's my girl from New York, from Brooklyn?
Cardi B.
Nah, she's a stripper rapper.
Cardi B, she was a stripper. Rapper. Have you seen the videos of her stripping too?
I'm talking about, I said one of the boys, the other girl with the chick.
Young M.A.
Yeah, Young M.A. You could be one of the boys if you want. Just come in and just smash. You know, it's all good. However you want.
I was disappointed when Young M.A.'s career seems like it kind of stalled out because I really like the idea of this like tough-ass lesbian rapper.
Well, I think she kicked the door open, and I know for a 100% fact there's a bunch of tough-ass lesbian rappers out there. So come on. Let's go. The point I'm trying to make is, there's a whole open space. Anything you haven't seen done, you could do it. It's just there. You just got to go in there. You can't just keep being the same image. That's what we got with the guys right now. They're just being the same image over and over again. And every time we get a new look, a Kendrick Lamar or something, you know, it's like we like love it because it's new.
It's crazy, yeah, because I feel like with women, a lot of times the things that we accept from men are not necessarily things that people are trained to accept from female rappers. Like, for instance, a lot of rappers are basically talking about how they're drug addicts. I'm drinking lean all day. I'm doing pills, blah, blah, blah. Yep. You start hearing a woman talk about that, you don't take it the same way. You start thinking about, like, well, what about her kids? Like, you know, what's her future going to look like?
The double standards, yeah.
And it's really not fair because we should be applying that standard to dudes as well.
Well, you know, 2017 changed a lot of things. Let's see where it goes.
That's very, very true. That's actually an interesting topic to even discuss with you. I wasn't planning on this, but I mean, the world is changing all around us in terms of the stuff that people are willing to accept from hearing rappers talk about in terms of ways to treat women and stuff. What's your perspective on, you know, you definitely said stuff on your albums back in the 80s and the 90s that you probably wouldn't want to say these days, right?
Yeah, things change, man. You know, just the whole misogyny thing and the playing field and everything. You know, it's about time. It's like, you know, we have gone through these different cycles in human history and American culture. You know what I'm saying? Where things that aren't accepted become accepted later on. You know, I couldn't, there would have been no room for Too Short in 1955. Bitch. I'd have been in fucking jail or some shit.
Oh my God. I know. They would have locked you up and thrown away the key. That would have sucked.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just saying, we're at that point now where, I feel like as I'm 50, 51, soon to be 52. And I feel like I always looked at the generation older than me, like y'all just don't get it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm proud to say I'm now that guy that younger kids looking like, you don't get it. I get old dudes don't get it. And I just think that when you kind of look at where I'm sitting at, I'm looking at these older, aging, gray hair, like out of here, you know, soon, the system, the powers that be, and they're just pointing fingers. Everything is all wrong. This is wrong. That's wrong. You're doing it wrong. These little kids and their electronics is just all wrong. Everything's just wrong. Mm-hmm. But if the reality is, you're saying, pointing the finger saying it's wrong, but you fucked it up. They didn't fuck it up. They were born into this shit. So I feel like we're at another cycle. When I was a youngster, we had our young issues. You know what I'm saying? I was a youngster in the 80s. We had our young issues. We rebelled. We fucking, you know, it got colorful and loud and hip-hop, and we didn't want to do what the 60s did or the 70s did. We wanted to do it different, you know? So now I feel like the world that you know, the world that you're fighting for, the shit you are protecting and arguing about every day is changing. You have no control of it. These young millennials and the next generation after them are not going to look at our shitty ass world we left them and accept it. They're gonna build their own world. So it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's like probably one of the most remarkable things about your career in general is that, like, I mean, a dude is not supposed to be able to stay so relevant for so long in the way that you have. Like, I mean, a dude in his late 20s, a lot of people are looking at him like, all right, his career is sort of reaching the end of the career. With you, I mean, a lot of your biggest successes were at when you were 30, 40 years old, which is unbelievable. Like, what do you credit? You clearly have an incredible, like, lifelong obsession with rap, like a true love for the culture. But what do you credit in terms of what has been able to make you last so long in such a credible way?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a student, not just of hip hop, but just of life in general, of music in general. So, you know, I love the blues, jazz. You know, I'm one of those people who feel like it flows. Mm-hmm. So in order for it to flow through you, you got to go back and forward. You got to, like, be present. You know what I'm saying? You have to be in the love of the music, you know? You can't just go, oh, what I'm doing is the best, and I really don't. I've heard people say this. All I listen to is myself. I don't know how that works out for you, but hey, whatever. So, you know, I just think that all my career, man, I come from the guys on the corner, you know, with a radio and just, like, really speaking their fucking minds about, I like it, I don't like it. You know what I mean? It's trash or that's the shit, you know? And it was just plain and simple. So when I started off having those guys as my first customers, you just get it raw. It's like, it's either the shit or not. So the first time I got on stage, it was like, you know, I had been proven. I had done the rowdiest house parties in East Oakland, you know what I'm saying? Like, where they would whoop your ass if the show wasn't good, that type of shit. So I feel like I come from that. So when I started going platinum, and you get in that bubble where maybe you're in your own little platinum bubble and you no longer are in touch with the streets or the people who are really giving you honest opinions. Now you got yes men around you. I didn't go through that phase. Mm-hmm. I kind of stayed on that corner. I stayed with my homies. I stayed with the, you know, stayed in the clubs, which is very important. Like, you know, at one point in my career in the mid-90s to mid-early 2000s, I damn near lived in strip clubs. And I felt like, even though I was approaching late 30s and you know, getting close to 40 in those years, I was, you know, OG in the club back then. Mm-hmm. And I was fucking just soaking up the game. I wasn't trying to be the most active guy or acting like I was young and wild. I was, you know, in my right lane and just listening to the music and watching the bodies move. You're like, oh, he's a fucking old pervert. He goes to strip clubs to look at pussy. I actually go to strip clubs to look at how pussy moves to music, you know what I mean? I'm doing my homework while I'm having a good time. So I go to a dance club, and they're like, I remember one night I was leaving the club. I had like some chicks in the car, probably like three chicks. I'm in my little four-door car or whatever. And then some dude walks by and he's like, man, get your old ass out of here. But I'm like, you walking down the street and I'm driving out the parking lot with three bitches.
That's an easy argument to win right there.
And, you know, I understand his frustrations, like, dude, stop taking all the bitches, you know, if your time passed. But he doesn't realize that I'm actually at work.
Right.
I'm probably, you know, playing songs in the car, testing out songs on these chicks while they like nice and tipsy, trying to get some real opinions. And just, or at the club, checking out what the DJ's playing, what's the sound now, what's hot. And it's not like I'm trying to be, you know, this motherfucker who just won't get out the club. I'm like, it has to do with my job. It's fun, but I'm also doing my research at the same time. And then, you know, just being around young people in the studio, just being around people who you trust their opinions on music, who knows the hottest new dances, who knows everything about me. I just like being around people who, you know, something comes up on, hey, you see what just popped up on social media? I'm not on Instagram and shit all day, but the motherfucker sitting next to me is. So, you know, I kind of like just try to stay in the loop, even though I was never on MySpace. I'm not an Instagrammer all day. I just try to fucking still just tap into it a little bit just to know. So right now I'm making a lot of songs. Who knows, man? I'm 50 fucking two in a month and a half. So who knows if a 52-year-old rapper will slip in on a hit. We're going to find out, though.
Oh, man. If anybody can do it, it's you, you know?
We're going to find out. And it's like, that's not the end of it. What I do is not for the next dollar. It's not for the next sale. It's not for anything. It's really for hip-hop.
Yeah.
And I'll get pissed the fuck off when you tell me on my 30th birthday that I'm an old-ass rapper. Because I'm 10 years away from the biggest record I'm going to make. So why can't you tell me when I'm 30 to stop?
You've proven the people who are saying you're too old wrong too many times to even take it seriously at this point.
I just had the timeless conversation with E-40 where we kind of tap each other on our shoulder, on our backs. Like, you're doing a good job, buddy, hanging in there. And we're like, yeah, you timeless. No, you timeless. You know what I mean?
That must be an epic conversation right there, because you guys have both got so much game and for such a long time.
Well, you get on the phone with a guy like 40, he just... either he just joined the 50 Club or this is his year.
Right.
But he's close. Either way, he's like, yeah, man, you know, I did an album, Be Legit, we're getting ready to drop. Yeah, I just got my quadruple album, getting ready to drop. And I'm like, you did what?
Quadruple
He's like,
album.
Yeah, my quadruple album. And I'm like, well, you know, I just made a lot of fucking songs too, but I'm not dropping a quadruple album. But it's just.
That's a lot of confidence right there.
But when you hang the phone up, you're like, that's motivational. This dude, I know for a fact he dropped like 5 double albums, a triple album, and I think he dropped a quadruple album before.
Amazing.
So it's like, you know, if you got a guy with a work ethic like that at his age and is still making relevant records, what the fuck is hip-hop talking about with these rules and regulations of expiration dates? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it can be harder as you get older, but the whole point is to work your ass off or be such a part of the culture that doesn't matter. Like, I got a lot of shit for being 34 or whatever. People act like that's old. I look at guys like you. I had Master P in here the other day. I'm like, man, you can't tell me shit, because what's the other option? Like, you know, if I was 34...
How old is Jay-Z?
Oh, yeah. And he's a real inspiration, too, because he put out an album this year that was so critically acclaimed. People went crazy for that. And I love that, because he really made an album that sounded like the album he wanted to make, you know?
And he's about to take Beyonce on tour again. It's like, he's a rapper.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, we all love the
how
same
old is,
shit.
How old is Jay-Z?
I think, what is he, 45 maybe? He ain't 50, but he's mid-40s, I'm assuming.
And the point I'm trying to make is, you mid-40s, a rapper... You got $1 billion, and you're about to take Beyonce on tour, who happens to be your bitch. That's the shit. That's hip-hop.
He's the greatest. 48 years old.
Yeah.
Not bad. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice when we get him in the 50 Club.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, we're doing this for hip-hop. Whether we realize it or not, there's a rapper right now. It could be, I don't want to quote him because they keep saying it over and over again, old-ass hip-hop is whack-whack. But the old rapper started the fucking... war of words by saying the new shit was trash, which it's as trash as 80s hip-hop was, as 90s hip-hop was. There's an equal amount of trash and great shit that's always been in hip-hop. True or false?
Oh, yeah. Of course, there's tons of garbage.
Black rappers have been from day one.
It's easier to get your garbage out here nowadays with YouTube and everything, but...
So, I mean, we always had quality rap, always had garbage rap. It's just any young rapper right now, you sitting there going... Fuck, I don't want to hear that old ass shit. I heard somebody say, I don't want to listen to any rapper that's over 25. I get all that shit, but one day, you're going to be a 40-year-old rapper who would love to make money. You might not, because the odds say it might not happen for you. But if you did, if you had an E-40 career, a Jay-Z career, a Too Short career, you would fucking love it, because 20 wasn't no different from 40 when I was on tour. 20 wasn't no different than 40 when I made a hit record. It wasn't, you know, when I go and get the money... it's no different.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
the same shit.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I'll end up in situations where I'm around a bunch of, you know, 20-year-old dudes in here, and they'll be all talking about, you know, a bunch of up-and-coming rappers from the hood in L.A., and they're talking about dudes who got 5,000, 10,000 followers, whatever. And I actually have, like, that fear of missing out because I don't know who they're talking about, and I'm like, I got to know who these dudes are. They're not even always talking about rappers. They're talking about street shit. I'm like, you know, I'm in the position where I'm so curious about hip-hop in general that I want to know what they're talking about just because that's going to inform my overall view of what's to come and everything like that. But I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of rare. It's a lot easier for people to fall back and be like, nah, I don't care anymore. The shit that everything, most people, average person, by the time they're like 21, their interest in hip hop starts to wane. And all of a sudden they can't fuck with shit, with new shit, the way they fuck with the stuff when they're in high school. But that's because they're getting old.
Yeah.
If you don't feel that way, then you're winning.
Yeah. You should try to avoid going into your 30s and then only liking the hip hop you listened to when you were like in high school. Mm-hmm. And then you get 30, 35, 40, and you still listen to those same records from your high school years. Like it gets kind of lame to get in your car over and over again.
I can't even relate.
Every time
to
I get in your car, I got homies, every time I get in their car, they listen to the 90s rap.
Right.
And I'm like, bro, you know, every word of this song, you heard it so many times. Like, it's some new hot shit out. Mm. Like, it was some shit that came out 10 years after the 90s.
Like, hard shit.
Like, nope, I'm only playing this right in here. If it's made from 90 to 95, I'm there. I'm yeah. not listening to shit else.
I don't get that because to me, it's like if you're a guy who loved Wu-Tang, who loved Tupac, whatever, it's like you're telling me that you listen to Kendrick and you don't find something to enjoy about that. You don't listen to Chance the Rapper and say, yo, this dude is doing good, even by the standard that we had in the 90s.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I just don't understand why, as a music fan, you don't find the good and weed through, you know, kind of sift through the shitty shit. It's cool, man, but I enjoy the process.
Hell yeah. There's a controversy that unfolded yesterday where basically there's a rapper named Lil Xan who's been mm-hmm. popping off over the last 6 months or so, and he had an interview where I don't know how much he was thinking about what he was saying, but he basically said he didn't like Tupac.
Said Tupac was boring.
Same shit that Yachty got in trouble for like a year or so ago, and Waka Flocka very upset about it, which kind of stood out to me as funny because I remember vividly like a decade ago when Waka Flocka was being discussed like he was the antichrist of hip hop.
Yeah, you just got to do a little research. Okay, this is me. I'm like, what year was he born? Xan.
Lil Xan, he's probably 21 right now. So
Tupac died in 96. Mm-hmm. So what year was he born?
He was born, right, actually 97, like right around the time he died, yeah.
Okay, so I was born in 66, and a lot of artists that died before I was born were great in their day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know shit about it. I probably would like it if I heard it, but I just don't know shit about it. If you gave me 30 fucking minutes with Lil Xan in my car bumping some Tupac, he'll be like, I picked a certain songs, and he'll be like, oh. He was born the year Pac died. Come on. We can't, you know.
But do you feel like, is that an issue for you? Like, if you heard Lil Xan say that, you know, outside the context of it already being controversial, would it bother you to hear him say, yeah, I don't listen to Tupac or Too Short. That shit is kind of boring to me, you know. Like, or would you be understanding like, well, yeah, maybe he's not supposed to understand my shit because he's so young.
I'm giving you my analogy right now. I'm trying to, like, take you back to, I was born into a house that played lots of Motown.
Mm.
Lots of Motown. So the hit records, they kind of resonate with you. They stick on your brain. You know, the Temptations, the Smokey Robinsons, the Diana Ross songs, Supremes, they stick to you.
Mm-hmm.
But Motown was a lot more than just that. It was a lot of other records going on in the 60s that were big records. And, you know, we don't hold on to them. I don't hold on to them.
Mm-hmm.
I hold on to the hits because they've been on fucking Windex commercials and movies and shit and all this shit. But I don't really hold on to every record that was hot when I was being born.
Right.
You feel me?
Totally.
I hear this song, Raindrops Falling. I don't fucking... Somebody played that shit when I was two, but I don't want to fucking revisit it.
I think my mom was playing that when I was a kid, too, yeah.
Okay.
That's a
so
classic.
I'm just saying, so you have a kid who had a parent who bumped the shit out of Tupac, Too Short, and Ice Cube when you was in diapers in the car seat. Mm-hmm. And that shit is embedded in your brain. But then, you know, another kid could have been exposed to it or not exposed at all. And it just doesn't mean that to you. But ask Xan, if Tupac is boring, what's hot? What in hip hop's history is hot to you?
Mm.
Like, what's hot? Something. And he ain't gonna say Lil Wayne is whack.
Mm.
Like, you talk to a youngster right now, Lil Wayne's an OG.
Yeah.
Lil Wayne, they like, I grew up on Wayne.
Yeah.
It started there.
Mm.
There's nothing before that.
Right. Yeah, because when I think about it, like, you know, I kind of feel where Waka was coming from because Tupac meant so much to me as like a 12-year-old.
Waka made a statement. He said, Tupac raised me. I grew up on Tupac. That's your world.
Yep.
He's like a kid, elementary school.
Mm.
You know?
But I mean, it's kind of crazy because the remnants of Tupac's influence are so obvious to me in younger rappers, like his influence on the game, or like with a lot of the younger rappers, especially like Bay Area shit, like real hardcore street LA shit. Like I can see the Too Short in it. I can see the Dr. Dre in it. And it's hard for me to even separate myself from being able to see that. Like, of course, when I look at like Draco the Ruler, who's the hottest rapper in LA to me right now, it's like I see a lot of Eazy-E in him. Maybe not specifically in the style, but the nihilism, the attitude, shit like that. It goes a long way in terms of that. And I do feel that kids, like for me, like I was born before Run DMC were relevant. I'm never going to sit here and say, oh, Run DMC are trash to me, even though I personally never really went through like a big Run DMC phase.
But you weren't 16 years old at a Run DMC concert when they were the hottest rappers out like I was. Like, shit. Like, that's God. You know what I mean? never seen no shit like that ever.
Yeah. Lately I've been doing like the thing that I think a lot of old heads wish that young rappers would do, which is like doing my history, like, you know, going back, reading books, trying to really like realize the impact of like, okay, how did Rakim change the game?
Go back and just see who all held the crown.
Mm-hmm.
Rakim kind of held the crown for a while. Kumo D definitely had it for a minute.
Right.
Fucking Curtis Blow was the first one that had it. The crown, like the what Kendrick would be. You know, back in the crown. Who the had the crown. Fucking crown? You know what I'm saying?
Because you can't ever know about everything from back
DMC
in the day.
Run DMC had the crown. LL right. Cool J had the crown. Mm-hmm. Like the GOAT for a minute. You know, like I'm on top of the game. Eazy-E was on top for a minute, kind of, sort of.
You're coming from a crazy perspective, though, because you remember L.A. pre-hip-hop, right? Or pre-L.A. hip-hop.
Well, you just said they asked Zan about Tupac. Ask Tupac about Ice Cube or Too Short. That's what he grew up on. You know what I'm saying? So that's my little homie.
That should be extra insulting to you. Like, you taking it in stride, but that should be insulting because Tupac was a kid who fucking learned from you, which is crazy to think about that influence.
Yeah, but it's just, I think that we're in a business, hip-hop, where it's not required to kiss ass or to fucking pay homage. It's like, in hip-hop, you're bred, it's in your DNA to grit on the mic and say, did you guys know that I'm the greatest motherfucker in the world and fuck all y'all? And they go, yeah, yeah.
And in a lot of ways, that's required, because if you really understood 50 years of hip-hop history, it would be hard for you to get out there and get on the mic and act like you're the greatest fucking rapper who ever lived.
Man, in my era, when I was a young rapper, you couldn't even ask another rapper to do a song with you. You couldn't even want to work with their producer. You couldn't even dream of, like, what the fuck was a collaboration?
That's true. That took a while to catch on, huh?
I mean, it was just like, you guys, hey, let's hang out and smoke weed and kick it. But when I go to the studio, you're not invited. Like, I don't need you guys to make music. Like, that's not what we do. Like, you know, I'm in the same neighborhood. It's Digital Underground, MC Hammer's around the corner. It's fucking, you know, like, it was shit going on. Tony, Raphael Sadiq right there. Like, we didn't call each other and say, help me make a song, bro.
It's almost kind of unfortunate when you think about it, because that's the number one way that dudes expand their fan bases now, is to do songs together.
But we didn't need each other.
Mm.
We were all fucking platinum, and we all had the fucking formula how to make hot music. You didn't need each other.
Or was it just ego in a lot of ways, where, you know, you and MC Hammer could have blown each other up a little bit more, but I mean, was it just the fact that, like, to be a rapper at that time, you were sort of cut off from that idea?
Man, I needed Digital Underground, MC Hammer, and E-40 to be Too Short. I needed them. Right. I needed them to do what they did, so that every time I go back in the studio, I'm like, fuck, did you hear this fucking song E-40 just made?
Right.
Like, it's motivation. I didn't need E-40 to help me make a song.
Mm-hmm.
I just needed him to keep making hits so he can hype me up. I feel like, you take a Drake and a Kendrick right now, they got that thing going on right now where they keep trying to one-up each other. You got a competitor that's pushing you, you know what I mean?
That's the cold war of hip-hop beefs. They'll never get real explicit about it, but you know they don't really fuck with each other too much. I like that.
I love it. I'm saying that's the shit to me, and it's like, yes, that's what this is about. So if you got a rapper who doesn't want to fucking give it up for another rapper, you can't really blame him. You can shit on him, talk shit about him, but you can't really blame him.
Right.
for just saying what he was supposed to say. Mm-hmm. I'm the fucking best.
You know, that's like, I like that about rap, though, is that rap is one of the last places on earth in our culture and everything where it's not very politically correct. The whole fucking thing is based around motherfuckers trying to outdo each other, trying to stun on each other. It's like just accepted that, you know, dudes are fucking each other's girls for bragging rights. And
it's hard to find a rap record that doesn't mention, I'm about to fuck your girl. It's in damn near every song, a one-liner in every song.
You feel like you kind of pioneered that in a way?
I feel like it goes all the way back to the blues and the jazz musicians. Like, they were doing it, they just weren't in the songs.
Right.
And if you probably, like, listen a little closer, you know, like, there's probably, like, listen to, like, a horn player. He's probably, because the saxophone player in the jazz band will play that horn and stare at you on a date with your girl. Mm. He'll stare her down and play that horn and fuck the shit out your bitch after the show. It's the same shit. They just weren't rappers.
Right.
It's the same shit. You know, like, the blues guys and the little juke joints and shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hip-hop-ish. We come from that. You know what I'm saying? It's the same shit. Motherfucker, you flirting with so-and-so's girl and he hit you in the fucking face with a trumpet. You know, back then they used to carry guns and shit. Shoot your ass right in a minute in Mississippi somewhere.
They just didn't sing about the guns so much.
Yeah, I mean, it was different laws too. Back, you could shoot a motherfucker in the leg and it was illegal.
Really?
You know, like states like Louisiana and shit. As long as you didn't shoot the kid, it was like, I can shoot you lower.
Really?
Just be like, you know, like, you made me mad to shoot you.
I always think about that when you hear about somebody getting shot in the leg. You wonder, like, did they just really aim for the leg?
Yeah, it happens. It happens. It happens.
Let me ask you this. When you are looking at young talent these days, what stands out to you in the sense that, you know, a lot of people make a big deal out of, oh, image is bigger than music these days. Or, you know, even for somebody like me who talks to labels and stuff, it's like, it's very aware of the fact that, you know, the personality oftentimes means more than, you know, lyrical skill in this day and age. What do you look for?
Well, that's definitely a factor right now, is just this image thing of how you come off on the camera and how you come off on social media and everything. That's cool. Not so much as the stage, as I would like the stage to be a part of that, but it seems like you can convince a lot of people that you're dope as fuck by going in the studio, shooting some videos and doing a lot of posts. And then you get to the stage and it's like, what happened to that part? So I think that should be added on to that. But at the same time, I like the same thing I always liked in an artist back in the day. I just like overachievers. I like artists that get it. It's like you hear as a tool, a recording studio, a drum machine, a fucking sampler, any goddamn thing. I'll leave you in the room with a producer. Mm. What can you do? Shit, you know what I mean? Like really, what can you do with that? So the overachievers tend to... I'll use like Lil Jon for example. I've dealt with a lot of artists over the years, and he was always my favorite as far as artists that I helped get on because I didn't put Lil Jon in the game. I just actually gave him an opportunity. I was like, you know, he had a stumbling block, and it was an obstacle, and I just got the shit out of his way, and he just took the fuck off. Like, we made a record, and
was the obstacle the label? Were they just not fucking with him? Not letting him push shit out?
It was an indie label that he was trapped in a deal with, and he just...
And they kind of brought you in to sort of help, or how did that play out?
I just helped him wiggle out of it.
Okay.
The wiggle. And we made a record, and make a lot of records. Mm-hmm. But for a guy like Lil Jon, here he has in his hand now, I made a record with Too Short. This is... You know, mid-90s, I'm fucking platinum, platinum, platinum. Now he's an up-and-coming artist with a record with him and Too Short. He didn't just play it in his car around his friends or go to Atlanta radio. This motherfucker went everywhere and called me like a couple months later and said, I got something for you. I'm like, what? He's like, our record's a hit. I'm like, oh, okay. And he made that shit happen. Mm-hmm. And he's an overachiever. Like, the overachievers, they come in and you can't deny them because they put it in your fucking face. And whether you say that's the best rapper or the best beat, they just give it to you. It's some kind of way. If you go on a fucking, some kind of hustle, it could be whatever the fuck it is. It could be Soulja Boy, whatever. I don't give a fuck. Like, motherfuckers just make you like it. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of our best artists, some of our most talented artists are missing this thing that might be the social media spark, the charismatic personality that makes labels want to sign you or make the ladies love you or something. Like, you the dope ass artist, but you can't bring it to the surface. You don't have the skills to bring your talent to the surface. And unfortunately, this is not that industry where we give a fuck, you know? It's like I know a lot of dope-ass rappers that once they realize that it ain't gonna happen for you. They don't even want to make the transition to like what they should be doing, which is helping other dope artists be doper. If at, you know, like Kanye surrounds himself by a bunch of dope ass writers and producers, and they all mesh together to make dope ass products, projects. A lot of guys in hip hop don't realize, like in film, you want to be a director, you want to be an actor, then you end up fucking being the lighting guy, having a good career. A lot of hip hop people don't get that. And I do see a lot of ex-rappers and producers migrate into like the workforce of the music industry and film industry, but a lot of them just get this fucking sad look on their face and go get a warehouse job or something and just give up. Like, never be a hip hop artist and go get a warehouse job after you like have like a hot record or something.
Like, for me, the dudes who have the most longevity and the dudes who seem like they carry the most goodwill in rap are usually the dudes who are willing to go and do something for a young artist that they see some potential in, even if there's not an explicit, you know, financial gain from that. You see Drake, he goes and does a song with Black Boy JB. Yeah. That's kind of like part of his rollout for his album is like, look, I'm going to take this dude who's buzzing right now and I'm going to go and just blow him the fuck up. Not for any particular reason. He didn't sign him. He didn't do anything like that. But that goodwill is what's going to probably keep Drake as relevant, entity for 10, 20 more years.
He just got a co-sign from like 10 million youngsters. Like, he's that guy. He's dope.
Yeah. That's why all these young kids in Memphis or whoever that love Black Boy already, that makes it hard for them to look at Drake and be like, nah, he's getting old. He's getting played out. No, it's like that goodwill is giving somebody that opportunity. You see it with Kanye. His albums are just covered with different, you know, at a certain point, Dr. Dre, Kanye, they become the maestro. They become somebody that wants to help younger artists and command
it. I have a philosophy that I don't think anybody really knows I do this shit, but when I do shows, and this has been from day one, I go into neighborhoods and like not just randomly just walk into some ghetto ass neighborhood, but I like go places where people really are, like by knowing somebody from there or everybody got a cousin somewhere. And then we just get around the real people that really are there. And I'm like, who's the hottest rapper out here? Like, who's the hottest rapper y'all know? Like, y'all got a studio? Mm-hmm. Like, I go places and make songs with motherfuckers that I don't know if they're ever going to blow up, but I do know that where I'm at right now, everybody loves this guy. Right. I'm like, I'm about to make a record with this guy. And it's weird because after you do that shit hundreds of times, the after effect is crazy because people that I've never met in my fucking life come up and go, hey, remember that song we did? And I'm like, no. Like, it was the hottest shit in goddamn Peoria, Illinois. I'm like, no shit.
Peoria of all places. That's amazing, yeah. Oh, that's incredible. I mean, and there's a lot of dudes you could point to like that. Like, Bun B might have more features than goddamn anybody on earth. And
I remember
he's out
one
here
time,
showing love.
I remember one time I was in Miami with Pimp C, and they were doing the big pimping video.
I watched that last night just to catch your cameo in there.
But yeah, for Jay-Z and it was like a party. Like, the whole video scene, they had just Bun B and Jay-Z and all them Dame Dash. They had just came from Trinidad or somewhere doing scenes, and then me and Pimp C drove down from Atlanta and came and did the second shoot. And we hung out in Miami probably like 2 weeks after that shoot. And I remember Pimp C, he called me. He's like, I got these motherfuckers, man. They must have dug up some money or something. He said that they had, I don't know how much fucking money, but it all smelled like mildew. And when I got there, it had a little home rig studio and shit. And these motherfuckers just had endless mildew money. It was like wet, stinky ass money. They gave me like $15,000, like $5 bills. We spent that shit. But that's hip hop right there.
But it was, you could just use it, even though it smelled like mildew. You just kind of dry it out and shit.
Spent them fives. You can't, money can stink if it wants to. Yeah. Smell like shit if it wants to.
That's amazing.
This shitty money.
Is that why you were in the Big Pimpin' videos? Just because you were real close with Pimp C at the time?
I was in the Big Pimpin' video because at that time, that might have been like 1998, 99, it would have been a crime to not put me in that video.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
It would have been like, it would have been totally foul.
That's crazy to think that you would have almost like a monopoly on the public image of that particular segment.
I was one of the people that was trying to convince Pimp C to do the song.
Because they didn't want to, yeah.
Yeah, Bun B tells that story about, you know, Pimp didn't want to do it. He just didn't want to do it. He was a Tupac fan, and he thought Tupac and Jay-Z was enemies, and he was like, I'm on Tupac's side.
Oh, it was more that than the sound of it, because the song itself didn't sound like anything that UGK had ever rapped
over. Back to the Xan and the Waka and the impact that Tupac had on people. Like Pimp C, I'm not sure if he had a relationship with Tupac. Don't know if he ever even met him. Mm-hmm. But I do know that he made this statement. He said, I don't fuck with nobody that don't fuck with Tupac. Mm. So if you made any record that mentioned anything in that East-West shit bad about Tupac, Pimp C was like, I don't fuck with you. Mm-hmm. And he was just bent on that. Now, somewhere in there, Jay-Z must have said something, or it was East-West. I don't know.
Right.
But he didn't fucking want to do the song. And everybody was like, bruh, Jay ain't like that, man. Jay fuck with people from here and there and all. You know, Jay was big. It's like, you got to do this shit.
Right.
He did it. And it was big. It's a big record for UGK.
Do you remember when you met Jay-Z?
I don't remember the moment I met him, but I do remember getting the phone call about doing the Real Niggas Do Real Things. I was on Jay-Z's first or second album. I think it was the second album. But before that, I used to see Jay before I knew him. Mm. We would do shows. It's like people always talk about this East-West shit, but it was a strange relationship between California and New York rappers at one point. And it was just like this thing where I know you popping. I know you got a lot of money. I see all your jewelry. I know we on the same show, but you kind of like look at a guy, he look at you. You just don't say shit to each other. So I don't know if you consider that meeting, but it was like we used to do shows and we used to be around and it just was it was that same ego thing where it's like it wasn't required for me to be friends with like EPMD. Mm-hmm. And we did shows together, and me and Eric Sermon became really good friends in Atlanta years later and made a lot of songs together. But I even told him back then, I was like, bro, you know we used to like stand like 20 yards away from each other and wouldn't say shit. He's like, did we? It never registered to him. Right. I was standing fucking right there. I don't give a fuck. It wasn't even on my mind to go over there and say what's up to him. It was just like, oh, that's EPMD. I listened to all that shit. I was just in the audience watching him perform, but I'm not going to go say what's up to him.
I guess that's one positive change probably in hip hop over the years that people aren't even conscious of, is just the fact that dudes are more willing to just, you know, work together and stuff to accomplish their own goals.
Yeah. You know, I just think it evolves into what it wants to be. Hip hop is, to me, my nickname for hip hop is the blob.
The blob, why?
Because you can't put it in there or there. You can't tell it where to go. You can't stop it from growing. You can't shape it to what you want it to be. You can't do anything.
Especially now, because it's just so big and it's just taken over like popular culture in general. It's kind of hard for me to even remember like a time, because I always thought rap was the biggest thing on earth. But it's weird now to realize like, no, it's definitely the biggest music on earth.
Well, there was a time when we had a magazine that was like, you know, dictating, you know, what hip hop was. Like magazines like The Source, and you can even throw XXL in there maybe. But The Source really was like
the Bible.
The Bible. And it's like, it was just a New York opinion of what it should be, what it is, and what it's going to be. And the blob stayed in that box for a long time. Mm. But, you know, now you can go to Japan, you can go to fucking goddamn Middle East, you go anywhere, go to West Africa, they're rapping everywhere.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. France. But spit
it. It's interesting that, like, in America, I feel like Americans are so egotistical that it's hard to even imagine, like, a true overseas rapper really making an impact on the level of the most popular American rappers. And that, I guess that's why Drake is such an anomaly, even though, you know, he's like a couple hours over the border. But, you know, that's like, it's very out of the ordinary. And like, you know, we've seen a lot of like really, really good English rappers, but they never end up making an impact that's even like 10% of like the top US rappers.
They would if they came to fuck with me. I give them that shit.
That's fire.
Take them to East Oakland and, you know.
Take them to East Oakland, show them around.
Drop them off in East Oakland for a day, and then they'd be like, oh, I get it now. All it is talking shit, man.
When you look at the history of the Bay and the Bay's, like, sort of insular hip-hop culture that's been, like, insanely influential, but also has a lot of times sort of struggled to break through the mainstream in a way, what's your outlook on that? Because in a lot of ways, you were very important in the formation of all that, but then you have all these guys, Mac Dre, whoever, who are, like, they're the biggest stars in the world in the Bay, and then a lot of times don't necessarily transition out of that area. Why is that, in your opinion?
Well, Bay Area artists, to me, are somewhat, pacified in the success you can have as a NorCal rapper, which means you get all of NorCal, you get kind of Central California automatically, the Fresno kind of that go with you, Modesto, on up to Sac. You get cities like, could be Vegas and Phoenix, a lot of times Salt Lake, Seattle, Portland. They'll follow, like, you know, indie Bay Area artists and support them. And it stretches out to like, even like Kansas City, places, you know, where they get support. So what you get is a rapper who gets a local regional record that's hot, and he does a lot of shows, and he might get a few thousand per show, and it's like a good fucking job if you, you right. know, if you got another side hustle or something, it's good. Mm-hmm. So you don't get the necessity to really feel like your only way out is to sign to a major label or to sign to somebody, mm-hmm. because so many people before you did the same formula. And it started with guys like me and E-40 and, you know, just independently doing our thing. I mean, even Hammer started off independent. We just, you put your own records out and then, you know, you grow it. So I think that there's a certain thing you got to do to totally give your whole hustle to, like, major labels. You gotta be a certain kind of bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when it's big, it doesn't seem so bad when it's big, but when it's on a smaller scale, we've seen so many artists from the Bay grow and then earn that slot on the major label. And that's the last thing we hear. Like, they sign to such and such label and it's no longer big anymore. It's like, they come home, you got this big check, car and shit. Everybody's like, you the hero now. That's it. The labels kind of disappear you. So the next guy, I'm just like, fuck, I got offered that same deal, man. They want to give me $500,000 up front. Damn, look at that. Oh, boy, by now, you know, if you measure it up, okay, I'll give you $500,000. And then two years later, I still ain't dropped an album on you. I'm still, like, shelving you and playing games with you. You could have made that $500,000 in them 2 years easy. Mm. Easy. Like, you fucked off 2 years. Now you ain't even got nothing. When the label drops you, you got nothing to go back to. It's over.
Yeah.
So we can go through a checklist right now, who that happened to in the hip-hop industry, but it happened a lot in the Bay. Mm. And some of the guys probably realized that you get a longer run just staying in your lane and not trying to fucking, like, hit a home run. I mean, I hate to name names because we live in the days of, like,
blogs,
misquotes and shit, or just take a line and make it a headline, a middle of a sentence and make it a fucking headline. But a lot of guys, man, a lot of guys signed to those major labels, and I'm like, these are big artists. Mm. Why aren't they big when they get on the major label?
Right.
And we know how the major labels operate. They fucking sign the hottest shit that's getting a little spark out there. You got some hits on YouTube. You got some motherfucking regional people, like, on your jock radio play or whatever. You're doing concerts in that area, and they sign you. And then the fucking first thing they tell you is, I need to get you over to Miami, Atlanta, New York, and L.A. to work with all the producers who are making the hottest records right now. Mm. It's over. That's, yeah. Like, that's not your shit. Like, you're not hot because you got to work with the hottest producers. You're hot because you work with your motherfucking self and your crew, and that's why we like you. We don't like you because you signed the major label down the street, and then they put you with all the best producers who got all the songs on the radio right now.
Yeah.
The fuck is that, man? That shit is whack.
See, I see that a lot with, like, this sort of, like, newer generation of, like, SoundCloud rappers that my podcast is kind of, like, associated with, where, you know, they're living their life, they're making a couple hundred thousand a year probably, and they're feeling good. They get to tour, they do their thing with the merch, whatever, they're popping on Instagram. And then at a certain point, they either they start to feel it fizzling out a little bit, or the pressure is just so hard that, like, you have to keep growing, or mm-hmm. else you're just going to fizzle out. And I'm always kind of curious about what advice I should even give them, because once you see them sign with a label, they get their little advance and stuff. And then a lot of times it feels like that is where the enthusiasm stops, because the label doesn't know what to do with them. But from your perspective, like, what is the right path for them? Should they just be happy to have that independent hustle?
Well, after experiencing this thing on every level of independence and major level labels and all this shit, and knowing how they operate and everything, my advice, and I'll go inside of the major label and stand on the soapbox and say, nobody signing this motherfucker. Like, if you got an independent hustle and it's working, don't fucking give your shit to a major label and for upfront check. Don't fucking do the shit, man. And it's like, somewhere in there, there's probably a good deal. People have gotten great deals, but they're not offering great deals. So, you know, shit, unless you some kind of fucking super lawyer genius motherfucker that's going to get around that 50-page contract and make it work for you, I don't know. I wouldn't recommend that shit. But on the other hand, let's just say you're a really good artist and you got like some really good people on your team and you guys put a really good package together. You're not really like popping on SoundCloud or no shit like that or nothing. You just got good music and somebody can get you a deal. That kind of situation is good for an artist like that. You're not finna pop on social media or build your own following up. You need to be in a place like that, being in that system, hopefully get your shot at getting big. But if you got if you got the knack and you know how to get a few hundred thousand in a year, you fucking getting paid like a goddamn doctor. What the fuck are you fucking giving your job up for a loan, not a payday, a fucking loan?
A lot of people get real confused about the advance money.
That's a loan that you got. It's hard to pay that motherfucker back to. But nah, man, you know, I just think like it comes a day when you want to pick your own fucking single or your fucking video or what city you work in next or who you work with. Like it's just the internet, man. It's click now. Ain't nobody fucking going in. You got to convince somebody to go buy a fucking CD or something. It's just click.
From your perspective, if you were to find an artist at this point that you were super enthusiastic about it, what's more appealing to you, to go get a big advance and sort of cash out your percentage of it with an up-and-coming rapper, or to be like, no, I'm going to take you under my wing. I'm going to show you how to build your merchandising business, how to tour, how to, you know, put stuff out and make money off streaming and stuff. What would appeal to you more?
I just launched a label. It's called OG Records. Mm-hmm. And my whole objective is to do short-term deals with really good artists, and with the outcome being education, just a learning experience. And of course, I want to make money, but I don't want to bury your career and I don't want to own you. I really just want to partner up with you long enough for you to say, let's be partners longer, or thanks for the help.
Yeah.
And that's it. I'm not going to try to kill your career on the way out. I'm not going to try to fucking stagnate your shit so that you know you can't get bigger than me. None of that shit. I just want you to know that you don't need to put your career in somebody else's hands. It's very easy to manage your own career. And when I say manage, I mean even be your own fucking manager, because you really just need you and your fucking lawyer. If you want to be technical, if you get a manager, to me, your manager should be somebody that does the things that you can't or don't want to do. And mainly, in my world, a manager better be bringing you money.
Right.
Like, you better be booking and getting deals and not just sitting there taking my phone calls doing what I said, dude. That's a personal assistant, not a manager.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, independent, man, all day. Like, what the fuck? Like, if you in the skater world and you a rapper and you got a following, like, don't fucking sign a fucking major label. Fuckers don't know shit.
Yeah.
They really, and one of my pet peeves about major labels is that the staff that brings you in is never the staff you got to work with 2 years later.
Mm.
They fucking, the revolving doors there is so fucking fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole damn department's changed. You like, it used to be a guy that sat in this desk right here that believed in me. You're like, he doesn't work here no more.
Yeah.
And no, they're not here. I'll have them call you back.
You know what? I thought a lot of people were saying that when 21 Savage signed with L.A. Reid or whatever. And then it's like one of his comments was like, you know, it made me feel good to sign with a strong black dude, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, that strong black dude might not be there 6 months from now.
And
that happened. Yeah.
And that happened. Yeah, so I'm like, hold on to your hustle, man. That's just my advice. We could sit in a room at a panel or some shit with all these motherfucking moguls and motherfuckers, and they'll convince you how to pimp the system and work it. A lot of people get a lot of money up in major labels and know how to work it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing. But I'm from the independent. I'm cut from the independent cloth, so.
Respect. Kids, take note. That was a very important question for me to ask. Next question is one that I've literally been wanting to ask you since, like, high school. Khalees. Bossy, how do you go about writing a verse for a pop star who is also married to someone that you probably have a lot of respect for, that, you know, because she was married to Nas at the time, for those who don't know, and he's still probably breaking open his checkbook every month for her.
Mm-hmm.
What was the thought process into, I mean, obviously you've done plenty of pop records, you've done plenty of songs with girls and stuff, but what was the thought process going into that? Is there any special considerations?
Well, that particular record, came with specific instructions you know, directly from Khalees, and she was shooting for exactly what she got. Because I was told that, and this has happened to me with female artists. They're like, I want that shit talking too short shit. Talk shit. I just need, the reason why they called on me was because the record was like, I'm a boss bitch. Mm-hmm. That's the gist of the record. I'm a boss bitch. So who's gonna snap, give you the stamp of approval for being a boss bitch? Mm. You know, it wasn't even a Nas political thing. It was a Jive Records thing. And when we shot the video, that's the first time I really got to chop it up with Nas, like really like one-on-one. We sat on the camper and just chopped it up in between the video takes and shit. And we've been cool ever since. So I just did my job on that one, man. That was a no-brainer. Like, I heard the record. You know, boss bitch is the easiest way to call a female a bitch.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, boss bitch? Right. They'll never say, who you calling a bitch?
The safest version.
Yeah, call her a punk bitch and you might have a problem.
I love the idea, and you and Nas chopping it up at that stage in his career and sort of building. Did anything in particular stand out about when you first met him?
I think Nas, to me, I watch his career, and I think me and him have one thing in common, because, you know, he's very lyrical, and I'm very shit-talking, and, you know, just too short shit-talking, the misogyny shit, whatever. But I always noticed that he wasn't really a fame whore. He wasn't really trying to, like, jump in front of everybody in front of the camera and, like, pimp out the camera. Like, you know, he was more like, you know, I'm going to let you look in at what I'm doing, and I just make good music, and I just do me. You know, making videos and doing all this shit is part of the job. Mm. But some people live for that shit.
Right.
And others, you just notice, they're like, you know, he's one of them cats. He's like, he ain't no camera whore, no, or just like, you know who I am? Like, he wouldn't walk in the room and be the guy who's like, gotta fucking be, you know, everybody praise me. Like, he's
right.
Walking around and be cool as fuck. I like to be that same kind
of
shit.
And it's kind of a shame, because a lot of times the dudes that we see popping off now are the dudes who manage to stay relevant by going crazy on the internet every week. And, you know, sometimes that makes you wonder, what is the trajectory for somebody who's more of a Nas, who the lyrics aren't necessarily about themselves as much as about the overall city, the scenario, and also, you know, he's just not the kind of guy that's going to be jumping in front of the camera all the time.
It's like sports, man. You know, you gotta adjust to the times and shit. The game changes. Mm. And the game changed right now. You know, a quiet guy in the room might not be able to become a Nas or Too Short. You know? You gotta make some fucking noise right now. It's just the way it is. So
that's a fact.
You know, the playing field's getting bigger, the rules are changing. It's like, what, you know, shit. You know?
Facts. You know, there's another one that was huge with us at the time that came out, was that Wiz Khalifa feature for On My Level. Mm-hmm. That was classic as fuck for us at the time, because I was watching it last night just thinking, man, it's crazy to even think about how fucking cool Wiz was at this point.
That was the same thing. Wiz didn't know me. I didn't know him. And it was the label that made the call. They seeked me out and family like, you've been requested for this song. I knew the Black and Yellow. I knew who he was. I knew he was from Pittsburgh. And, you know, I knew he had that funky sound too. Mm. He was just emerging at the time. It was just becoming a mega superstar. And I rushed at the opportunities, did the song. We immediately did the video. And if I'm correct, check me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I've ever been in a video that got more hits.
Really? Because what, it's like 200 million or something? Yeah,
I've never been in a video. When it was at 80, I was like, shit. You know? And that's like regular for those guys, but you know.
Right. Yeah, Wiz blew my mind at the time, because I think he was the first time, I was living in Brooklyn when all that shit was coming out, and I always, like, since I was a kid, felt like I knew everything about rap, because I've been reading The Source since I was in like third grade. You know, obviously I was full of shit at a certain point, but I remember like a white hipster girl in Brooklyn telling me about Wiz Khalifa and just being like, what the fuck? Like, there's no way that you're telling me about some shit that's actually hot. And then realizing, like, oh no, she's right. This is blowing the fuck up, and I don't know, because I'm not... Yeah, he wasn't getting maybe the magazine coverage at the time or whatever it was.
Yeah, somehow he touched in on an audience that immediately was like some type crossover type hip hop shit. Like, it was immediately pop, like immediately. And I kind of like listen to Black and Yellow and listen to some of his early records. I kind of didn't really see it going that way. Mm-hmm. I remember the first interview I saw him, I thought he was a fucking gangbanger. Like, I saw the tattoos and shit.
Right.
And I was like, I never would have expected, you know, what we got now,
right,
from the intro. But he's got a knack for those fucking records, man. Like,
those records
that the hip-hop audience is like, that's our guy. And then this, they're pop records. Mm. Like, if you got the touch, you got, that was like kind of Bone Thuggish kind of.
Mm. I mean, crazy thing about Wiz is that, you know, people have been talking about weed and rap aggressively for like, you know, 20 years before he came out, and he still somehow managed to make smoking a lot of weed seem like this new thing.
Yeah, you got to give Snoop Dogg a little credit too for Wiz. Oh, yeah, yeah. That co-sign was great. The Dr. Dre co-sign was great for Kendrick. You know, the co-sign is still big. The J. Cole co-sign from Jay-Z was big, you know.
That's very, very true.
You know, the co-sign is big.
So is there an interesting story behind the Jay-Z, It Was All Good Just a Week Ago chorus that you did? Because I feel like as a kid, that might have been the first time I really started to check for Too Short.
Yeah, I did not write that. And it was just one of them things. I listened to that record a million times ago. Anybody could have said that, but Jay wanted my voice to say that.
You got that pain in your voice because that's a sad song.
I guess. I don't know. But he says, say that just like that right there. Say that. And that was just one of them things where I look at that one like a, you know, that was like a Tom Brady handoff to the running back. He just like, here, just, you know, run easy touchdown before you go.
It must be crazy to have that level of respect that something like that could just be sort of handed to you, you know, because, you know, obviously at a certain point in your career, you were completely used to just grinding for everything you had. And then you go so hard that eventually you got stuff like that popping up.
I couldn't do anything. There's nothing that I could do to make a New York audience like Too Short. There was nothing I could do selling a million records, going in the studio, doing what I knew was dope-ass music that a million people would buy. New York wouldn't fucking touch it. Mm-hmm. And then I did a song with Lil' Kim, did a song with Biggie, did a song with Jay-Z, Eric Sermon. And New York's like, yo, kid, respect. But I figured out that, you know, call it what you want. It was those days where it was hard to penetrate the market. Dr. Dre and Snoop and the Dog Pound had got a little love. Even though it was the East West, they still was bumping the fucking Chronic and all that shit in New York, but they would not fuck with Too Short. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I was like, if I rap and make records with New York artists, they'll like me. So I kind of cheated my way. And they still really never really fucked with Too Short songs, but they'll fuck with the collaboration. So it was cool.
That's amazing.
Get in where you fit in.
Facts. So you're always, you know, going to be mentioned in the same sentence as Pimpin'. How do you feel? Are you aware about the way that girls, I feel like girls are way more in the position now where they can kind of pimp themselves, in the sense that they got the private Snapchats, they got the cam girl shit. Like, girls who might have otherwise been selling pussy or doing porn, and now they can kind of just take it into their own hands. And I feel like that's like a really interesting thing that's arose out of like the same impulse. Like,
out of the same fucking, you know, independent hip hop spirit. Like, how can a rapper blow his career up on the internet, you know what I mean? It's the same way. How can a bitch blow her pussy up on the internet? It's just marketing. It's just spread your legs and turn on the fucking camera. and ding, ding, ding. This fucking motherfucker start clicking. But you know what? I feel like pimping is very misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, like, understand it a little bit, it's just like management. Mm-hmm. And just, I mentioned a minute ago that some artists probably don't even need a manager. Mm-hmm. They got the smarts. You just need a lawyer to read the fine print. Some hoes don't need a manager. You know what I mean? But a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is she might have bad math. She might be like remedial. Mm-hmm. She might just fucking be clingy and needy and just be one of those people who just, you know, just kind of baby girl is kind of like, don't want to stand up and be a grown-ass fucking woman. So, you know.
At the very least, on the physical level, especially like in the streets, it's like you need somebody to protect you.
But you got a lot of situations, man. When you say pimping, you got a lot of, like, you got a lot of damaged goods out there. Mm-hmm. Where somebody fucked chicks up in the head before they even got to a world of stripping and prostitution. Somebody scrambled it up in there and did stuff to them at home and around home and shit, and they just fucked up. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the economics of it, where this remedial bad math bitch is stripping somewhere and her fucking money don't add up. Bitch is just dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to be insensitive or anything, but I'm just saying, this could be a math thing. It could be a intelligent thing. And then this slick pimp comes along and goes, you only make $150 a night and you strip all night? Bitch, Let me elevate your life. And then, you know, like, it's a dream to some girls. Mm-hmm. and the other girls is fucking slavery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't condone it if some guys like chicks like, I don't want to do this. I want to go home. And it's like, nah, bitch, get back to work. That's not pimping. That's slavery.
That's crazy. Cause you were like the face of pimping when people didn't necessarily even know like the realities of what might be going on with that. And it was sort of more of like an image. And now that like the internet and everything is more information out there of like, oh, these are the fucked up things that happen in that realm. And people still probably kind of want to put you in that conversation. Right.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, we in this 2017, the, you know, Time's Up, Me Too, and everything. And it's like, you know, it's still a bunch of hoes out there that don't want to be Me Too. They still want to fucking, they still want to go out tonight and solicit a little bit and make that easy money. And it's just, it's not the same as it was with the internet. Mm. Because even with the laws like now, you know, like it's to be like a pimp or some shit could get you in trouble in some places and stuff versus a chick who might just float around on her own selling sex or selling sexuality, and it's not a crime for her per se. She's not gonna get a 20-year bid for pimping and pandering or human trafficking for selling her own vagina. You know what I mean? So you can do it on many levels now. You can go, you could just, it's girls right now, they go to the club every night and they might go get $300-$500. And they do that a few nights a week and they pay their nice apartment rent every month, and it's just like they got a nice car and shit. And then this girl's like, you know, on the internet doing the shit, taking calls or just doing it by webcam type shit, like just click and that dude freaky shit on camera. It's sex is selling, bro. It's big. It's a big deal. But the pimping of it is, it changed a lot. Like, you know, you picture pimping, and what do you want to picture? Somebody with a suit that rhymes when he talks. The pimps now look like rappers.
Man, you go to downtown LA though. I seen some motherfuckers in fur coats pimping down there. They look like they're straight out of the '70s. That shit blows my mind.
Well,
but that's the exception to the rule.
The pimps I know look like rappers. They drive cars like rappers, and some of them even rap.
Yeah.
Shit.
Facts. Hey, okay. This is, I know you're on a sort of a time crunch here. We're about the hour mark. This is one thing I want to talk about before we wrap this up. It just came out that 21 Savage said that he's not doing jewelry anymore. He's saving his money. He wants to make it cool to invest. Yeah. And I thought that was pretty interesting because he's still a young ass dude. He's still like at the peak of his career. Is that something that when you look back, you sometimes look at the stuff that you did money wise? And obviously we're aware of all the crazy ass shit rappers do in terms of jewelry and all that kind of stuff. Do you think that's a good influence that he's having on the kids out there? And what do you think?
Well, I think he probably was influenced by potentially like maybe family members who are business owners. Well, that I heard he had like close family that was like, you know, Atlanta's very entrepreneurial.
Right.
And then I even think maybe like, you know, while Amber was sucking his dick, she was like, you better save that money. You know, I was with Kanye. You know, I was with Wiz. You know, I know how to grow wealth and the motherfucker. So she could have helped a little bit, but it is very fucking smart that a guy at his age would make a statement like that. Whether he lives up to it or not, it's a great statement because a guy like me and a lot of guys like me probably didn't snap out of it till like in our 30s and shit. Like you got those wild days of just a lot of money coming in. You're just doing a lot of fucking reckless shit and a lot of jewelry store visits and a lot of car lots and shit. And that shit is dumb. But I tell people when they ask me, what do you think I should do? I was like, well, man, I'm going to tell you what you should do, but then I'm going to tell you what you should do. You should save it all, invest it, but you really should just go fuck it all off and have fun. Like it's the same thing. It's what you want to do, man. It's really you know, the responsible thing. And crisscross. I you can ask Jermaine or somebody, but somebody always told me like crisscross, the one guy who the one Chris, the one who passed away, was like he used to be in the strip clubs. I lived in Atlanta for a long time. He'd hang out with cars, whips, kicking it. And the other Chris never hung out. He kind of, you know, stayed with his high school sweetheart, never really balled out, and just kind of, you know, kept the money. But what do you want to do, man? You want to have young, fun 20s? Or you want to be young and responsible and build that shit so that you know, a young, rich motherfucker? It's a personal decision that he is very smart if he does it.
Right.
Because I'm telling you right now, from me, 10, 15 years later, you really don't gain much out of fucking it all off and partying out to your 20s. It's a phase. You got to grow the fuck up.
Yeah.
So if you're able to skip that and grow the fuck up, I recommend it. But I also recommend having the fun if you want to.
I mean, he might have blown all his money, but he's dead now too. So it's like we're all gonna die. So it's.
But if you come out of the fun years and there's no more income, then you feel hella stupid.
If you're working construction, then it's like fuck.
You feel hella stupid. You're like, fuck, I just fucked off that many millions.
Yeah.
That's.
If you were blowing thousands in the strip club for your whole 20s, and then you're in your 30s, and you got to work your ass off for $100 a day, that's gonna hurt.
I'll tell you one thing. If I ever like have a moment where like, fuck, I need $1,000 cash right now. The first thought I always have is, remember the fucking $1,000 you threw in the strip club? Probably have that shit on you right now if you didn't do that. So I don't know. I can't imagine spending $5,000 at a strip club, let alone 10 and 20 and 40 and 50 in a night. Like,
Jesus.
Like, what the fuck? A bitch needs a rake to pick up my money? Like, bitch, we're actually having this conversation about how you gonna spend my money? Damn.
Yeah, that's I can't do it. Guy was bragging to me the other day about dropping $20,000 in the club. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot, bro. Like, no matter how much money I make, I hope I can stay the fuck away from that.
Let me get this right. I get to fuck you, and then you're going to count my money and go home with it. That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot closer to
something
that
I can see. Not a good deal, man. Not a good fucking deal.
For sure. Fuck. This was such a good conversation. I'm so glad that we didn't do the... So you're from LA and you moved to Oakland, the story, you know, it's like, I watched fucking Drink Champs last night. I watched the DJ Vlad one. I'm like, we definitely just got to chat. We don't got to run through the whole story all over again.
What's cool. You know, too short story. Great, man. I used to sell tapes to drug dealers.
I know. And made a personalized tape for $20. Maybe there's some people out there who might want to take that hustle upon themselves.
I'm pretty sure drug dealers right now would love some good music.
There you go. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or just
that is kind of smart.
Or just a customized tape. About them.
If you needed $1,000 cash, that might be your best bet at this point. If you want to get that real quick.
Yeah, buddy. So what's hot that I don't know about?
What's hot that you might not know about?
West Coast hip hop.
West Coast hip hop. Well, we got to talk about Shoreline Mafia. It's a very multi-ethnic crew of dudes, all from East Hollywood. They're going crazy. Draco the Ruler, like I just said, is unreal.
I know about him.
He's like crazy influential.
I like
a lot
the
of these dudes.
Idea of East Hollywood. That's like a new thing that I said a long time ago.
They're grimy as fuck. That's the whole thing.
The reason why I like East Hollywood is because it's so opposite of West Hollywood. And they're like, West Hollywood, Beverly Hills. I'm like, fuck, you motherfuckers know what East Hollywood is? Come over, crossover pass, like motherfucking, like where the W Hotel is. Let's get over there.
Right.
East Hollywood to the east side.
And then I got to give 03 Greedo, too. It's going crazy.
Yep, I know that name.
The song Mafia Business, he made that song about just a guy in his hood who passed, and he made the song just for the hood, and then it ended up, you know, they put it out, did a video for it, and that ended up being the song that blew up and got him signed and all this shit.
Well, you know, that's my new mission right now, is to be the stepping stone and to actually, like, my goal right now is to create a network of independent producers, artists, video directors, editors, just whatever it takes to not be on a major label. And we all just kind of connect and not necessarily, you know, be the same label, but just be the same crew.
Right, exactly. They were telling me that you got a compound that we got to come visit.
Yeah, it's called the Boombox. Okay. And the new label is OG Records. You can look it up, ogrecords.com. And the OG is not for like old gangster too short. It stands for Only Great Records.
There you go.
No, it really stands for On God. It stands for whatever you want to stand for at the moment. But
On God is good. On Hood is popping now too. A lot of On Hood.
Okay.
I don't know if I could really get away with saying it, but.
Put that on the hood.
On Hood. All right. Hey, Short, crazy, unbelievable to get to have a conversation with you. I'm honored, and I hope to check out the compound and everything in the near future, too.
Come on down, man. We're getting ready to start doing a TV show down there and everything, so just come check it out. It's all about independent artists. That's what it's about.
Beautiful. Hey, thank you so much, man. Much respect.
Good shit.
Everybody who enjoy this, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Thank you very much, man.
Bitch. I'm rolling like an alpine, but God, I'm rolling like an alpine, but God,